All set.
Are we booted up?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good then. Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
Morning, Al.
So let's do our introductions. Please state your name and your affiliation. And I will start on my left.
Al, this is Andrea.
Hi, Andrea.
Can I make a suggestion?
What do you got?
Because this can get so confusing if everyone talks at once, would it be easier if somebody who has access to all the names calls out a name and then the person tells their affiliation?
That might be easier.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Who has custody of the roster? Brian?
I think Lisa has it in front of her.
I have it in front of me.
Okay, Lisa, are you okay with doing a roll call?
Yes, here we go. Eileen Akers?
Yes, board member.
Astrid Fearnpool?
Good morning, Department of Social Services.
Andrea Giudice?
Good morning, board member.
Catherine Guzman?
Present and parent rep board member.
Samuel Pride. Beth Rival.
Here, board member.
Al Sylvester.
Present. Board member and chairman.
Ryan.
Present.
Mary Silverberg.
Here, board member.
Stephen Thal.
Good morning, present board member.
Randa Utter.
Present and board member.
Mary Burgard.
Good morning, vocational rehabilitation supervisor.
Welcome back, Mary.
Thank you.
Yeah,
welcome back.
But I like it.
Welcome back. I'd like an ice cream sandwich.
Christopher Lassen.
Present adult services supervisor.
Catherine Stum will be absent. Tyrell Sampson.
Present business enterprise program supervisor.
Lori St. Amand.
Present volunteer program specialist.
And for myself, Lisa Tanguay, present. Do we have members of the public?
Lisa, this is Andrew Norton, legislative liaison for the agency.
Thank you.
And my name is Dennis Regan. I was sent the agenda. I took that as an invitation. I don't know if I'm calling in too early.
Any other people in attendance?
Lisa, this is Dan Pride, board member.
Any other public members present?
Hi, my name is Brenda Biernat. I'm a parent, and I'm on for the public comment portion. I don't know if I'm too early for that.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Lisa. Oh. Lisa, this is Sam Pry. Can you hear me?
Yes, I got your name, Sam.
Okay, I'm going to mute.
Thank you.
Any other?
That was the roll call for the members and everybody else who spoke. Not sure if there's anyone else.
Hearing none. Thanks, Lisa. Now let's move on to the public comment portion of our program. Do we have comment from members of the public?
Yes, I have a few to make after the others make theirs. Stephen.
Steve, since you're a board member, you get to go first.
Oh. Okay. Good morning, everyone. I hope everybody is safe. Just a couple things I wanted to bring up. I wanted to thank Belt Services for the great calendar they put out. Gotten comments from several clients. They've got them, and they're very pleased with them. Very clean, very nice, very professional. Second thing is, there is some concern on my part from talking with some low vision specialists as to what is the future of low vision specialists, particularly for Belt Services and vocational rehab, as to how is that going to change for the future, with many of them retiring, and will there be alternatives, methods for those that may need low vision services. The next area is the impact of the COVID-19 and lessons learned on this advisory board. Is this going to change our mission, our future objectives, or how we set up work groups in order to prepare for the, quote, new normal, end of quote? And my last point is, will we be shared with lessons learned from aging and disability department as to where we're going to go from here, particularly how it's going to impact all of our departments, particularly employment, with many people working from home? Will this give us an advantage to getting our folks employed or getting proper training? And the other piece is the technology. There's a big concern as to the available resources for technology, not only for the vocational department, but for folks in adult services who need some access to different technology, and there may not be people to assist with this. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity.
Okay, great. Thank you, Steve. Any other board members first who wish to speak? Okay, hearing none, let's go to members of the public. Please identify yourself and step up.
Hi, my name is Brenda Biernat. I wasn't sure if there was anyone who wanted to go ahead of me. And I'll try to be as brief as I can. I am calling in as both a parent of a child who receives services, a child who is visually impaired, and I'm also a student. I am in the Vision Studies program at UMass Boston, and I am currently completing my practicum. So I have two hats. And my points are twofold. My son has a disability. His visual impairment, you may not be familiar with, is called CVI. It's a brain-based visual impairment, and it's actually the leading cause of visual impairment. My sense is that this advisory board may be less familiar with that form of visual impairment, but it's due to a problem with the brain. It's not a problem with the eyes, and it's the leading cause of visual impairment in children. So I will also say that my son and I, we came here from the West Coast so I could complete my program. We picked Connecticut specifically because Connecticut has a good passionate group of people who about CVI, and I wanted both my son and I to benefit from that, him in terms of a more appropriate education. He's in early elementary school, and also for me, entering the field of visual impairment, to be able to learn from really some of the best people, in my opinion, some of whom have really become leaders in the field of CVI right here in Connecticut. And I am, let's see, sorry, I have some notes here. So in this process, CVI is part of it, and being a parent, the other part is being a student. As you can imagine, COVID has impacted all of us. It's drastically changed what the visual impairment program looks like and certainly what the practicum experience looks like. Nearly everybody is doing it virtually. And even though I had previously been working with BESVI all through my program these past 2 years, and then when I came up to my practicum experience, found that it would not be supported. And I feel that Connecticut and BESVI has had this, this commitment both to UMass Boston and really to the field of visual impairment, where there is a critical shortage nationally and certainly statewide of vision teachers, including TBIs and O&Ms. My son has been a victim of that shortage, as have so many families. So anyway, finding out that I would no longer be supported as a student as I was entering my practicum, as a result of that, I did reach out to a few people, the liaison, some supervisors. Even after that, I still felt my experience was very, what happened was really unclear why a policy like that would happen. Other people in my cohort completed theirs partially during the pandemic, which came on in the middle of, a school semester. I want to mention that KC, who is the parent liaison, was extremely helpful to me. Late in the semester, I was able to connect with her, and she was gracious enough to help on my behalf. Unfortunately, there are really just a few weeks left to this semester, as we all know, and it was sort of too little too late. I've had very little, really very minimal support in terms of completing my practicum. That's important because, again, because of the shortage, as a parent, I'm extremely aware of how the impact of that shortage and trying to do something about it. And also, this model that we are currently in during the pandemic, the hybrid or virtual, I think it's largely virtual here in Connecticut, will continue for a while. It's extremely important for TBIs to be able to learn how to be as effective as they can possibly be right now in a virtual platform. And I will also add that there were TBIs who I had worked with previously. I was already familiar with their students who were willing to work with me, but for some reason not given permission to do that. My whole point is bringing it up as a matter of awareness. Personally, I feel like this is one of the worst times to be not fulfilling a commitment like that to the school. I am not the only student. There are people behind me, cohorts start all the time. It's extremely difficult in these times to get the virtual opportunities, especially if you are trying to find them on your own. And it's such an important learning experience, and it is so critically important to get more people in the field, and especially people who are really well trained. I really had looked forward to it and to really learning from, as I mentioned, some of these really strong TBIs who I knew of and who I had already been working with. So I bring it up as a point. It was very disappointing for me. My practicum is almost over. But, like I said, there are others behind me. I certainly hope that if this is the case, that it will be reconsidered, because it's extremely important to be supporting students as well as TBIs at this time. And, it doesn't give a good impression of the field, let me put it that way. But it's very important to be supporting students as well, adults, people who are in this same situation. I just wanted to bring it up as an awareness, a matter of awareness. And as a parent and student myself, my son's virtual learning, my time is limited. So I wanted to make the time to bring this to your attention. And I thank all of you for letting me speak and share my concerns.
Thank you, Brenda.
You're welcome,
Beth Rod.
Yeah, go ahead, Beth.
Just to comment on the last speaker, we understand how hard it is to teach under these circumstances. Hopefully we'll be out of this next summer. I just want TDIs to be aware that NFB.org, if they go to that website, has large support for teachers and students and a program every summer called the Bell Program. NFB of Connecticut also has a $5,000 scholarship for those learning to be a TDI. Unfortunately, this year, we only had one scholarship application. So there was definitely a disconnect because of our circumstances. We have always had a full ballot of applications, and this year we had one. So just for awareness, I want it out there that we do have scholarships, we do care about children, and we want them to go to the national program. And next year there will be a Connecticut program for Bell. That's it.
That's great.
Thanks, Beth. Any other comments from the public? Okay, hearing none, let's move on to old business. Minutes from 17 September 2020 for action. Do I have a motion to adopt?
Eileen Akers, so moved.
Seconded. I'm sorry, who's that who seconded? Is that Randa?
Andrea.
Andrea seconded. Thanks, Andrea. Any corrections, additions, discussion?
I have a couple. This is Eileen Akers with a couple of corrections. I hope I'm reading the copy that would be the appropriate copy. Right at the beginning, it says, according to what I have in front of me, on behalf of Chairperson Sylvester, called the meeting to order. I think my name would be in there. On behalf of Chairperson Sylvester, Eileen Akers called the meeting to order, if I'm remembering correctly.
No, that would make sense. Yes, I agree.
Secondly, let's see, this has to do with the motion regarding the date. I believe it says Ms. Thal. Should be Mr. Thal?
Indeed.
And then, the sentence under Children's Services, the opening sentence is repeated twice. Ms. Thum reported on the Children's Services program, and then that sentence comes again right after that. So just some input errors. And then generally speaking, I'm sorry I can't leave this unnoticed. We are still once in a while referred to as an agency. I believe Bureau is the more appropriate term. And those are my comments.
Agreed. Thanks, Eileen. I have one additional comment in that vein. I'm just looking for it right now. It's under BEP. It states a BEP had to forego some revenue, and there is a missing zero because I'm sure it missed out on more than $100. And I just want to offer a reminder to people to, if you're not speaking, please mute your phone, because if Fifi wants to go out, we don't necessarily need to hear that. The other comment I have has to do with the minutes themselves. Since we're releasing a transcript, I don't think it's necessary to have such exhaustively outlined minutes. Just an outline of what happened and what votes were taken would be sufficient. If people need more information, then we should refer them to the transcript. It would save whoever is typing up the minutes a ton of work, and it would reduce the note-taking by a substantial amount. I'm just offering that as a suggestion for our note-taker to make their lives a little bit easier. Do we have any further comments on the minutes?
Mr. Chairman, would you please give a moment of pause, because I need to just look and see what the draft minutes are that are on the website, just to be sure that the correct draft was what was circulated in the email that was sent out with the reminder. So just, I'm opening them up right now.
Okay. If you, sure, of course.
Okay. We're referring to the meeting of September 17, 2020. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yes. Okay. I have the minutes that are open on the website right now. And just to be clear, these minutes that I'm reading right now, that were previously distributed at an earlier date, that Chairman Sylvester called the meeting to order at 10:03 a.m. So there is no reference to Eileen Akers in these particular minutes.
What you think?
I don't know if the draft minutes that got circulated last week with the reminder were incorrect, but the minutes that were previously circulated and are on the website don't seem to be lining up with that of what was being referenced. I don't think there's a reference to Mr. Thal as Ms. Thal in these either. Eileen, where did you say that was located? Under what section?
Under the meeting dates.
Meeting dates? Proposed,
yeah.
Meeting date. On
right.
A motion made by Mr. Thal, seconded
okay.
by Ms. Silverberg, the 2021 meeting dates of March 18, June 17, September 30, and December 16 were passed as amended. So I
then, then clearly there's a discrepancy between the minutes that were sent as a reminder and what appears on the website.
Well, yes, and I believe that when the minutes were originally finished in September, those minutes were sent out. And those, what went on the website was sent out. So obviously what got circulated last week must have been an earlier draft of the minutes, because that's not what's on the website. So, Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that either we defer voting on the minutes and folks get the link and maybe vote on the minutes at the March meeting, or that some time be spent. But if folks are referring to what went out last week with the reminder, that is not what was circulated in September or what's on the website. And I'm sorry. I don't know how that could have occurred.
Well, that serves to illustrate my point about the minute. With shorter minutes, it becomes less critical if we have
right.
An element of confusion like this one. But without objection, I'm prepared to defer the minute to the March meeting.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this is Eileen Akers, and these were only, you know, input errors and really don't affect the substance of the minutes. I would suggest that we just proceed to vote on the minutes as originally published, and I apologize. I was referring to the most recent copy of the minutes that were circulated, but, you know, I'm fine with just proceeding with the vote.
Any objections? Any objections
no,
to voting
I would,
on the minutes?
Yeah, I would vote. Support Eileen. Steven.
Okay, thanks, Steve. I'm just pausing to be sure that there are no objections. Hearing none, all those in favor? Well, here's where we have a problem, because we have stated amendments to the minutes. So it makes it hard to actually make it a matter of record, since we have amendments on the record, and these amendments are in reference to minutes that we had received in the last week.
But, Mr. Chairman, these were corrections, not really amendments.
Because, well, it's the same thing. I mean, it isn't a change. But because we have two sets of minutes floating around, it appears, I think we're better off waiting until we have one set of minutes on which everyone can agree. I get that it sounds trivial, but as a matter of record, I think it's important that we all have a common understanding of what we're voting on.
And Mr. Chairman, this is Brian again. I would agree. The minutes, again, that were previously circulated and are on the website are indeed the minutes that should be acted on. And I think that what got attached and circulated last week may have been an earlier draft. So I don't believe that reflects minutes that certainly they weren't draft minutes that were circulated or posted. So I think that unless members are familiar with the set of draft minutes that was circulated shortly after the meeting in September and posted, that deferring the minutes to the March meeting would make the most practical sense in terms of voting on the correct set of draft minutes.
Mr. Chairman, this is Andrea. Do we need a motion to that effect?
No, we don't. Okay. We can just agree to defer. I mean, unless there's an objection to deferral, I don't see any reason to have a vote. But what would have to happen is the motion would have to be withdrawn, because we do have a motion on the floor, and we have to act on it.
All right, this is Eileen. Since I made the motion, I will withdraw the motion.
Thanks, Eileen. Hearing no objections, then, the meeting minutes will be deferred until March of 2021, the meeting of March 2021. I also have a suggestion when sending out a reminder to the board. Just put a link to the minutes in the body of the email. That way we'll have a common place to go for minutes. Because I recognize that in drafting the minutes, there may be several copies floating about here and there. So that way, if we make reference to the same set of minutes on the website, it should minimize confusion going forward.
That's a good suggestion. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, let me get back to the agenda here. Okay, we've dispensed with that. Now we're under new business, Blind Americans Equality Day Work Group Summary. Eileen, you have the floor. And I just want to remind people again, please mute your phone if you're not speaking. Thank you.
Before I start, Mr. Chairman, what can you tell me, or can somebody tell me what is the process for muting the phone? I don't know it.
Star 6.
Oh, thank you. Okay. I'm using a speaker. I have my phone on speaker. Can everybody hear me all right?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Good. It's a lot easier. I can read better that way. And I'm going to just make this as brief as possible. And I'm going to ask, Mr. Chairman, my remarks will be pretty brief, but I would like the procedure to have the full report of the Blind Americans Equality Day Work Group sent as an attachment to all board members. Is that okay?
That sounds fine to me.
Okay. So, despite the pandemic that totally dominated what we were able to accomplish, work group committee members should be commended for their individual contributions and hard work. Members were Katie Wiseman, Diane Weaver Dunn, Stephen Fall, Brian Sigmund, Catherine Guzman, David Gregoire, Andrea Giudice, Ann Fortunato, and Eileen Akers. The key points were activities and comments. We had one in-person activity. We talked about the ongoing Creative Expressions Project. And if you go back and look at the last meeting minutes, you'll see reference to that. Also, a key point would be outreach, and that included involvement of the Lions, the Veterans Multimedia Project, the publicity and the general publicity for the general public. That included a radio interview, Facebook, Google Doodle, and coordination. And that would be the focal point program that Steve Thal does on Chris Radio, and a program that CIBOK Hill had. Another key point would be national recognition and the implications, including the White House proclamation, the press release on employment issued by Amy Porter, and National White Cane Awareness Day, which was also covered in the report. And the report then covered ideas for possible future consideration. So again, this sounds rather blurred hearing me, but when you receive the attachment regarding the full report, please read it, because a lot of effort went into this whole process of Blind Americans Equality Day. And so I would appreciate your examination of that report as we move forward. And that is my report. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Eileen. Any questions for Eileen?
This is Stephen. Eileen, you did a great job. You had a lot of challenges, and I think you did a great job with summarizing it and getting people involved. So thank you very much.
The thanks does not go to me. It really should go to the entire work group. And thank you, Stephen.
Any further questions?
This is Catherine Guzman. I just wanted to sort of say the same thing as Stephen said, but Eileen, you did a wonderful job, and while I appreciate you spreading out the thanks to us all, you definitely took this on and kept everybody, you know, on track and were present in every way imaginable, so thank you for heading this up.
Thank you, Catherine.
Any further questions or comments?
Mr. Chairman, do we need to vote on acceptance of this report?
I don't think that's necessary. If we do want to do that, I would suggest we do it at the next meeting because we haven't seen it. So I may put that, that's a good idea, I might put that on the agenda for the next meeting. Why don't we just do that? And then that way it'll be an extra motivator for us to read the report if we need any motivation at all. And I just want to echo the preceding comments commending the committee on its work, and particularly the chairwoman on her leadership, because these things rise and fall on the commitment of leadership, and we certainly had plenty of commitment in spite of the challenges that we faced in bringing this thing together. So I commend you all, and I am grateful for the leadership that this committee has shown. Let's move on then to the Bureau update. We have Business Enterprises. Tyrell, you have the floor.
Well, thank you, Chair. All right, so as to date, BEP continues to be greatly affected by COVID-19, both in Connecticut and nationally. 28 out of the program's 32 business operator facilities remain temporarily closed at this time. At this time, we do have 3 micro markets operating in 1 self-filled vending location. That would be Department of Labor, Bombardier, 470 Capitol Avenue, and Wallingford Post Office as the self-filled vending opportunities. We were fortunate enough to operate the seasonal locations this year, such as Hammonasset Park, Rocky Neck, and Gillette Castle. Typically in the past, each season kicks off by Memorial Day. However, due to COVID and the many park restrictions in place to ensure the public safety, the concessions operated after mid-July. Fortunately, all seasonal locations provided operator profit with the short season business opportunities, so that was certainly a bonus. You know, weekly, the BEP field staff continue to work with each business manager to ensure they have filed for all eligible unemployment benefits, including the most recent lost wage assistance benefit. In addition, field staff have assisted each operator in filing for the Connecticut CARE Small Business Grant of $5,000, in which at this time, operators are awaiting confirmation of approval. So hopefully that'll get approved, and that will be a significant bonus to the program. Unfortunately, there's no set date for the reopening of any business facility that is closed at this time within the program. Some state buildings, such as the DMV, have modified the way they provided daily public service, so much so that the DMV in particular has requested our program remove in its entirety the small concession stands at four of their satellite offices, and that would be Danbury, Bridgeport, Norwalk, and Hamden, on the premise to regain additional space to allow for additional daily patron seating. Obviously, as we all know, social distancing is the key to this, to staying safe, so that has greatly reduced the physical population to whom they serve. Therefore, regaining any business floor space ultimately allows for the DMV to open up more online appointment opportunity to serve the general public. With the online appointment process in place, this has obviously reduced population and also service waiting time significantly. Therefore, business resumption date has not been determined at this time. So we as a program see a population increase to a level in which the program feels can provide a viable business opportunity to an operator, a request to reconvene business within the DMV will be made at said time. At this time, telework remains to be the primary request as a whole in state government. Therefore, majority of state buildings and office population remains reduced. I would say right now the program's goal at this time is to continue to monitor each facility location and prepare to position each operator back into their facility, providing a profitable business opportunity modified to the population in which they are to serve, while obviously ensuring the operator provides a food option that is in line with the local health department's health and safety protocols. Well, some good news, the program is pleased to announce that Pepsi has been awarded the statewide vending machine contract by DAS for the terms of July 1, 2020 through June 30 of 2025. A few highlights within that contractual agreement is a $325,000 annual sponsorship to be paid to our program. That's off the basis of a $2.5 million gross sales threshold that they set. Any amount accrued under the $2.5 million would be prorated equal to the percentage decrease between the annual threshold and actual revenue generated from the prior year. Both vending commission rates provided for snack and beverage are greater than the prior vending contract rate, so that's a plus. Pepsi is now offering a commission rate payout of 28% prior to the prior vending contract of 25% for beverages and 19.5% for snack versus 15% we were receiving in the prior contract. So that's certainly a bonus in these times. At this time, I would say 90% of the vending machines have been transitioned in contract, and in theory, 60 days was the set amount time in which we anticipated through contract that transition was to occur. But obviously, being part of this transition, that was an unrealistic time frame. And in addition, trying to make this transition occur during this pandemic. So we are greatly pleased with the process and the transition that has occurred up to this point. Tracy Moore and myself continue to virtually meet with Pepsi twice a week to ensure just that a smooth vending transition on all levels, from the machine installation, customer service related issues, on-site audit, and financial reporting are all in line with the contractual agreement. The meetings have been going well, and at this time I can really truly say that the program is excited about this new partnership. To date, monthly vending commissions are gradually picking up, and we anticipate this to be the trend as a result of the completion of the vending machine transition, followed by consumers' increased utilization of vending service due to the temporary closure of many of the cafeterias within those buildings we offer vending service to. Most recent October's vending commission
is down roughly 43.5% in comparison to last year's, which isn't that bad in comparison. I think we all anticipated much less, so I am pleased with that. However, with the facilities closed and the reduction of expenditures have also been observed, which kind of provide offset to our balanced budget. Currently, our general program expenditure account remains stable. However, a continued shortfall of monthly commissions or an increased expense could pose future concerns should population continue to be significantly reduced in locations we provide vending service to for a period much longer than one could anticipate. And at this time, I've requested the backfill of my prior position as a fiscal administrative officer to be suspended so we can maximize the program's budget. I've worked with the fiscal manager, and we've established a temporary agreement to allow for the redistribution of many of the key fiscal responsibilities to be shifted over to her department amongst three individuals. A reevaluation of that position will be reassessed in the future. Overall, I remain optimistic the program will make it through these times, allowing for operators to continue their business opportunity in a manner that will be fitting post-pandemic. And that's what I have.
Excellent. Thanks, Tyrell. I do have one question with regard to the vending machines being removed from DMV offices. Does that not present a permanent solution to a temporary problem? I assume you've done some back of the envelope calculations or some form of cost benefit analysis before you arrived at the conclusion that these should be removed.
Yeah. So honestly, what actually happened? The request came on their end, and as a program, we operate under the authority of, and them being the authority requesting this temporary change, it puts us in a position in which we have to act accordingly to their request. And speaking with many people over at the DMV, it stands at this time as a temporary request, and prior to this decision and the actions that were taken, all operators were actually not operating, therefore, without a date of return. It was, I don't want to say an easier decision to be made, but it was certainly a decision in which operators understood and were, I would say, okay with because of the unknown as to when they were going to proceed with their operation. But, you know, again, with the building in charge ultimately having the power and their request not to just remove an item and it be replaced with something similar, we have to move with the actions of their request. So they had requested us to remove this location, or I should say concession, and seek outside or replacement that was equivalent to the offerings that we provided, then there would have been much of a challenge. But with the request of the gist being due to the pandemic, we obliged, and certainly prior to this, the pandemic, operators, I would say, earnings weren't that great in the beginning. So certainly, if they would have resumed, we would have anticipated that they would have taken a drastic reduction, devaluing their operation.
Okay. All right. And I presume then that the opportunity still exists in the future.
Correct.
To ask if we can put the machines back.
Absolutely. And so what I'm going to do is monitor, obviously going forward month to month, to ensure that a population, if there's a population that increases to a level in which we feel is viable for business, the discussion to resume operation will be had.
Very good. Thank you. And I commend you on your decision to suspend the search for the FAO and spread out the duties into business management. I think that was a great move, and certainly helps with the revenue, and also leaves open the opportunity to revisit that position. So I thank you. And
thank you.
Since this is your first report, welcome aboard.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Tyrell?
Yes, this is Eileen Akers. If memory serves, the operators, any commissions from the vending machines were supposed to be paid directly to the operators. Jarrell, could you straighten me out on this? Is it happening? And what's the story?
Yep. No, absolutely. No, you're absolutely correct. So any operator that's in a location that offers a vending service, they would get the full amount of the vending commission. That continues. Obviously, that has been distributed to just a handful of locations, I would say from July to now. Many state buildings, between the transition of vending, Coke and Pepsi, there were times in which, let's say, Coke left their machine empty for a period of time. Pepsi, you know, might not have gotten able to do the swap out in for maybe 15 to 30 days difference. So some locations did not generate a commission, but for those locations in which operators do have vending, they are receiving commissions quarterly.
Thank you
so
very
much. For me. Absolutely.
Any other questions for Tyrell? Hearing none, we'll move on to the next item. That's Vocational Rehabilitation Services. Mary, you have the floor.
Hey, good morning, everyone. I'll start in Voc Rehab regarding our staffing. We lost two of our transition counselors back in March, ironically, right before we went teleworking. I think the second transition counselor's last day was the day we closed down and went to telework. But since then, we've been able to refill both positions. We're able to do online interviews and hired somebody from the outside. We have a new counselor started in mid-September. Her name is Stacy Ann Lewis. She goes by Stacy, but her email is stacy-ann-lewis. And she covers the northern part of the state. And the other position was taken over by Charlotta Copenhaver, who was a regional counselor, has been here for many years, but she moved in to cover the transition caseload for the southern part of the state. And she started around the same time, a few weeks later. And then we're in the process of refilling her position. She did cover the southern part of the state, New Haven, up to Middletown, and the shoreline. So we are looking to get that position approved and refilled. I don't think there's been too much movement on it, but hopefully soon. We are hiring for a rehabilitation technologist-teacher for the southern part of the state. We do have a few applicants that applied to our posting a few months ago, so we're in the process of interviewing those candidates. And that position will be stationed down in Stratford and covering the whole southwest southern part of the state, which is new. We haven't had a person down there for rehab teaching and rehab technology for quite some time, so excited about refilling that position. And since March, we've continued to telework our counselors, out in the field, very limited. So we've been utilizing a lot of the online programs for our clients to access. I'll just give you an idea of some of the programs that some of our clients have participated in. We've increased our collaboration with the American Job Centers. Some of the common programs that we've participated online is the healthcare certificate program, which is definitely one of their more popular ones now because there's such a huge need. So we've had a few clients participate in that. And also their IT program is 100% online. So those are two programs that are online. The AJCs have been doing kind of a hybrid model. So they've been going in person for some and online. We haven't had anybody participate in that hybrid model, although we have had some of our clients go into the program when they were open. A lot of them are actually closing down now, so they're going 100% online with the surge in COVID cases. So they all kind of operate differently, but they are for the most part going 100% online. The AJCs have also have an initiative that they've gotten together so they can participate, so anybody throughout the state can participate in any of their online programs. So they can sign on to a program that's offered in the North Central if you live in the South Central part. So that's a new development that just was launched recently. So that'll hopefully increase some of our participation. We've been focusing on trying to get the technology available for people to be able to participate online, because not everybody has access to a laptop or the technology available. So that's kind of another project we're working on, an initiative in the next couple weeks. We've had our next couple months, I should say, probably take a while. We have had a client participate in an online personal adjustment training at Helen Keller, which has gone very well. And also a client participate in the assistive technology training program through World Services for the Blind that was online. Again, that went very well. So they've been successful, the programs that our clients have participated in online. over the summer and